Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, April 13th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The situation remains tense in Durban after the port city was hit by violence directed against foreigners living in South Africa.
The situation is continuously bad. People are burning every night and also being attacked left, right and center in taxis, at work, also in their homes and their businesses.
ZANU-PF will hold primary elections in Bulawayo tomorrow to pick candidates who will represent the party in the June 10th by-elections that have divided the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai.
Are high, and even the teams that have come to monitor and conduct the elections have since started arriving. I've seen a couple of central committee members coming from much north, some from much south, and coming in today to gear themselves and prepare themselves for tomorrow.
And the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has handed over petitions expressing its dismay over the deteriorating economic situation in the country amid reports that nationwide demonstrations were flopped.
The demonstrations went well throughout the country, but there was also a bit of confusion from some people who were throwing some flyers and some press releases claiming that the action has been cancelled.
ZANU-PF will hold primary elections in Bulawayo tomorrow to pick candidates who will represent the party in the June 10 by-elections that have divided the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai. Following the MDCT's decision to shun the polls last week, some party followers from the city are voicing concern about what they are calling handing the city over to ZANU-PF. Still, ZANU-PF says it is pressing ahead with preparations and announced today that two candidates have already qualified unopposed. These are Joseph Chuma and Godfrey Malaba. In Harare, by-elections were conducted on Saturday. Five constituencies are up for grabs in Bulawayo. Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo reached Chuma, who says they are all set for tomorrow.
The preparations are going on very smoothly. It's just an internal process. There's nothing really to write home about. It's not like it's an outside election. It's just a process of selecting one person to represent the party in this coming, this forthcoming by-election. But so to speak, it's not really something that we can say that is a mantle, and we don't expect any fights amongst ourselves because we are one family. We're just simply taking out one person to represent us a constituency, from these five constituencies that are open for by-elections. So the spirits are high, and even the teams that have come to monitor and conduct the elections have since started arriving. I've seen a couple of central committee members coming from much north, some from much south, coming in today to gear themselves and prepare themselves for tomorrow.
Given that the MDC formations are boycotting these elections, do you see yourselves as winners already?
Boycott or no boycott, the MDC issue in this whole equation has become a non-event. It's not anything to write home about. We're not worried about them, whether they are in or they are not in. What I can tell you is that ZANU-PF is definitely winning.
That was Joseph Chuma, ZANU-PF Central Committee member and candidate for the Mpopo Mapelandaba parliamentary by-election. Meanwhile, reports say former ZANU-PF chairman for Mashonaland and West Province and ex-Hurungwe West lawmaker Temba Mliswa, who was arrested yesterday, is still in police custody. According to state and independent media reports, Mliswa was arrested for allegedly disrupting ZANU-PF meetings ahead of a local by-election to fill a parliamentary seat which fell vacant when he was expelled from the ruling party. ZANU-PF claimed that Mliswa was aligned to a faction of the party that wanted to topple President Robert Mugabe. He has dismissed these allegations as baseless. police were not immediately available for comment.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, or ZCTU, has handed over petitions expressing its dismay over the deteriorating economic situation in the country amid reports that nationwide demonstrations were a flop. The ZCTU says the petitions were delivered today at provincial and national government offices, including the office of the Minister of Labour, Prisca Mfumira, as their offices were closed at the weekend. Some ZCTU members staged peaceful demonstrations in Harare, Bulawayo, Mutare, Gweru, Mashingo, and Chinoyi, demanding that the government act on the plight of the workers. Some reports suggest the demonstrations were a flop, as most people chose to concentrate on their business. But ZCTU information officer Lasti Charabuku tells Studio 7 the street marches were a success despite attempts to block the demonstrations by some people who distributed fake ZCTU flyers telling workers to stay at home.
The demonstrations went well throughout the country. People did come out. There were a lot of fear. Some people were afraid that they might be beaten up or so. But people did come out to attend the demonstrations. As you are aware, these demonstrations took place on a Saturday. It is a very difficult day for most workers because transport costs are quite high for people to get a bus or a combi to town to demonstrate. They will have to sacrifice at least $1. But people came out to demonstrate.
We understand that in Chinoyi, very few people joined the demonstrations. Was it that it was not publicized?
Oh, it was publicized, but there was also a bit of confusion from some people who were throwing some flyers and some press releases claiming that the action has been cancelled. That caused a lot of confusion in some cities and towns like Chinoyi. But the few that came out really showed the world that they really care about the welfare of the workers.
That was ZCTU Acting Information Officer Lasti Charabuku in Harare with Studio 7.
The situation remains tense in Durban, South Africa, after the port city was hit by violence directed against foreigners living in South Africa. Thousands of foreign nationals from Zimbabwe, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Somalia have been displaced following the xenophobic attacks. Close to 2,000 foreigners are being housed in three temporary makeshift camps. According to police spokesman Tulani Zwane, four people have died in the violence, but some media reports put the figure at six. A total of 17 people have been arrested in the last 2 weeks.
Zimbabwe's Consular General in South Africa, Henry Mkhonoweshuro, told SABC News that diplomatic ties between South Africa and Zimbabwe will not be affected by the ongoing xenophobic attacks in the Greater eThekwini Metropolitan Municipality. There have been reports of attacks in Umlazi, Kwamashu, Inanda, and Sianda. Durban head of provincial government communications, Tami Ngwenya, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the situation is tense but stable.
The situation, I mean, as things stand, is relatively sort of like it's relatively calm, and we are engaging with the various communities that have been affected. And there will be as well, I mean, a solidarity march that will be led by the Premier on Thursday, involving religious leaders, community leaders, members from the friendly nations that we are, I mean, that are affected. That will be sending, I mean, that message to the world that we are against any acts of violence that are associated with xenophobia.
But according to your own investigations, what seems to be the problem here? Why is it that some South Africans are bitter?
Well, I think, I mean, it's I think at this stage, all that we know is that there was a dispute that had happened at the workplace, then it took a different turn. But the police, are maintaining law and order and are involved in dealing with these issues. Government have sent several strong messages to say that as South Africa, we subscribe to our obligations under the UN, various UN conventions, as well as the Constitutive Act of the AU, where we uphold the issues of human rights, our obligations to promote human rights, to protect human rights, and to fulfill human rights, which applies not only to members of or citizens of South Africa, but to everyone that is within our borders.
That was Durban Head of Provincial Government Communications, Tami Ngwenya, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. Human rights campaigner China Ngobese says the attacks on foreigners are worrying.
The situation is continuously bad, brother. It's continuously bad. People are burning every night and also being attacked in left, right, and center, in taxis, at work, also in their homes and their businesses on a daily basis, and still something ongoing.
But is the government doing enough to de-escalate the tensions?
It might be a difficult thing to comment on government, but from my view, as one who is on the ground, it's not enough. And that's the call from the people that are victimized as yet. That is the view of the people that are not yet victimized. That is the view also of some local South Africans, that they feel a lot should be done by government.
That was human rights campaigner China Ngwebese speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. Blessing also reached Durban-based Zimbabwean Blessed Murandu, who also says the situation remains tense.
In Durban, last night, that's when people were planning to, local South Africans were planning to attack all foreigners living in the areas around Effingham, Green Park, and Kenville, in the biggest industrial park in Durban.
In these recent xenophobic attacks, are there any Zimbabweans who are reported to have died?
No reports about Zimbabweans having died in this havoc, but only quite a few number were confirmed as injured.
The situation is obviously volatile in Durban, where you are right now. Some people might want to ask, why not just go back to Zimbabwe?
It's better to stay in South Africa and live like animals, like going back to Zimbabwe and suffer even worse. And after leaving Zimbabwe under different circumstances of even violence in 2008, in the 2009 hunger with cholera and whatsoever, it's better to live here in South Africa where we can get food and water easily than going to Zimbabwe and suffer even worse.
That was Durban-based Zimbabwean Blessed Murandu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Last year, the South African Human Rights Commission said the term xenophobia, which has been used to describe the violence against foreigners, should be called Afrophobia, as Africans seem to be targeted.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
some war veterans still nursing scars of Zimbabwe's liberation struggle.
And beneficiaries of Zimbabwe's controversial land reforms struggle to till the land. Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Hillary Clinton has kicked off her 2016 presidential campaign as another Republican contender prepares to announce his candidacy. The former Secretary of State hit the road on a multi-state trip starting in Iowa, home of the country's first presidential caucus.
Clinton announced her candidacy as the Democratic nominee Sunday in an online video in which she promised to work for the middle class.
I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead, because when families are strong, America is strong.
So Clinton is the first Democrat to join the race to succeed Mr. Obama, who defeated her in the 2008 Democratic primaries and cannot run again after serving two terms as president.
Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi is headed to the United States looking to convince President Barack Obama to give his country more air support and billions of dollars in new arms shipments to fight Islamic State militants.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has lifted a ban on supplying Iran with sophisticated S-300 air defense systems just days after world powers reached an interim agreement with the Islamic Republic on restricting its nuclear program.
The United States and European powers are pressing Libya's rival factions for an unconditional ceasefire as talks aimed at creating a unity government started in Algeria.
And national elections begin Monday in Sudan, with voters sure to give a new term to President Omar al-Bashir and a victory to his National Congress Party because of a boycott by the country's main opposition parties. You are listening to Studio 7, broadcasting to Zimbabwe from Washington, D.C.
In our health segment today, we are focusing on post-traumatic stress disorder. Indications are that a large number of war veterans who were in the liberation struggle of the 1960s and 70s are still nursing scars of the war. 35 years later, some of the former freedom fighters witnessed the killings of hundreds of people in war France, in nations like Zambia and Mozambique, and on home soil. Those images are still haunting them as they are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye reports.
Irene Zindi, who is now a Zimbabwean parliamentarian, joined the liberation struggle when she was a teenager. Zindi, known by her Chimurenga name, Jili Flamingo, says she witnessed a lot of killings in Mozambique. The former freedom fighter, who was one of the first women instructors and political commissars, was under the Zimbabwe African National Union, or ZANU's armed wing, the Zimbabwe African Liberation Army. Bombings by the Rhodesian Armed Forces, which left thousands of people killed and maimed in Chimoyi and other Zandla training camps, are still spooking Zindi.
It is very much alive in my mind. Very, very much alive. Sometimes I just jump out of my bed from nowhere, running away from the battle, a war. When I come back to my senses, I say, oh, by the way, I'm dreaming. Then I go back to my bed. That's the extent of the post-traumatic stress that I have.
Experts say her condition is associated with post-traumatic stress disorder, which normally affects some soldiers who return home after engaging with enemies in the war front.
It is very real. And sometimes you just become anxious from nowhere. There are so many episodes that I go through personally.
According to the United Nations Commission for Refugees, this condition affects millions of people in countries where there are armed conflicts. In Zimbabwe, it is associated with mental illness. and state institutions provide free health care for local patients. Zindi, however, says despite this free service, she never sought any treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder when she returned from the war front.
Not anybody did the way I know because of the poverty that we have. You're getting only $150 as your pension with a family to look after, and then you can afford to go and see a medical doctor for post-traumatic stress treatment. That's luxury.
Another war veteran, Bernard Manyaza, known during the liberation struggle as Paka Chipoyera, says he never thought of getting some counseling or treatment for the traumatizing experience during the war.
No, I didn't. I remained calm because I was clear about why I joined the war. I was clear even during the war. I was clear even after the war that I'm a people soldier. I was a people soldier. We were fighting not like the mercenaries. We were fighting for national democracy. And I understood that not everybody of us was going to be part and parcel of our government. We needed people to work in the civilian structures and so on, like I did. So it was self-initiative for people to go, to undergo the exercise you are asking me about.
For some war veterans, seeking treatment to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder was considered a weakness amongst ex-freedom fighters. Dr. Sekai Nyiwatiwa, who works in the Ministry of Health based at Parere Nyatwa Hospital's Mental Health Department, says this condition is affecting a large number of Zimbabweans, including war veterans. Dr. Nyiwatiwa notes most ex-combatants were not aware that they needed to undergo some form of counseling before being integrated into society soon after they returned home. Dr. Nyiwatiwa says it is not too late for those seeking treatment to get the help they need. She notes it is impossible for post-traumatic stress disorder to disappear without proper health assistance.
If you have someone who keeps on experiencing the traumas they suffered, particularly if there's something that will connect them to the traumatic event they suffer severely, then you can bring them to the hospitals, you can bring them. There are private psychiatrists in Zimbabwe. There are psychiatrists who work in government and the university. And most doctors are aware of it. If you go to your general practitioner, most of them will refer them to the appropriate authorities who can do something about it.
Zimbabwe attempted to heal the wounds of former liberation fighters in the 1980s. The process, meant to identify only physical body trauma, turned into a gravy train, as some of the war veterans allegedly claimed they had 100% disabilities, leading to the looting of millions of dollars from the War Veterans Compensation Fund, leaving it bankrupt. The majority were left nursing post-traumatic stress disorders with nothing to show for their contribution to the liberation war, except their haunting nightmares. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Every man got the right to decide. Still on Zimbabwe's independence, thousands of white commercial farmers have lost their arable land since Zimbabwe started seizing their farms in 2000 in what the ruling ZANU-PF party claimed was an attempt to address a so-called lopsided agricultural system controlled by one ethnic group, the whites. The new landowners are currently struggling to till the land due to various challenges. In this first edition of our independence series, correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports from Mashonaland West, Chinoyi.
President Mugabe, who was recently on an official visit to South Africa, has over the years attacked the former British Prime Minister Tony Blair's Labour government for reneging on promises of funding land redistribution in Zimbabwe made under the 1979 Lancaster House Agreement, which resulted in black majority rule in the country.
We did not send away whites. We took away land in accordance with what the British and ourselves had agreed upon, Margaret Thatcher's government, that there shall be a land reform program and land shall be taken from the farmers and be given to the Zimbabweans. So it was all constitutional. What we didn't want was that Blair should reverse that. That one. President Mugabe said, no, Mr. Blair, you can't do that.
Critics, however, say such attacks are an attempt to shift blame from his ZANU-PF supporters that forcibly took over white commercial farms' land, leading to what they claim is an unprecedented decline of production in the agricultural sector. Estimates are that commercial agricultural production declined by almost 70% after the land reform. But some farmers who grabbed land under the country's violent agrarian reforms that claimed the lives of several white commercial farmers say although the president was right in tackling the land issue, his government is failing to come up with clear-cut policies promoting new farmers. Mangura farmer Christopher Mamina is one of the local people who grabbed a farm 14 years ago. He is struggling to till his land. He says Agriculture and Mechanization Minister Joseph Made should play a key role in drafting and implementing an agricultural policy that promotes irrigation in order to boost crop production and animal husbandry on seized farms.
That ministry should be revived as soon as yesterday, because that department has brought hunger and suffering into the country. The rain, we are receiving erratic each and every season. So the Department of Irrigation and Mechanization is responsible for us to retain our title of Zimbabwe as the breadbasket of Africa. We must revive the irrigation department.
His suggestions are backed by Makonde farmer McDonald Mbirimi, who says it is difficult for farmers to depend on erratic rains. He says the government should seriously think about allowing indigenous farmers to use genetically modified maize seed to boost the production of the country's staple food.
GMO must come like yesterday. If it's introduced today, because I managed to put irrigation in Komunda Kwangu, I'm the first man who is going to produce GMO. Please, 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 let's swallow our pride. Why can't we produce GMO? We can produce better.
He says at the same time, government should ensure that farmers are able to access state-subsidized agricultural inputs.
The government can subsidize those who are manufacturing fertilizers and seed houses to allow a farmer to buy the product, fertilizer, cheaper.
Farming expert Paul Zakaria of the Zimbabwe Farmers Union concurs, adding that the government should introduce policies that are in harmony with the current farming technology.
So I feel that the government, if they were to subsidize the cost of fertilizer at the very least, then through increased production, I think they could offset the costs of subsidy because we'd have more production. We'd be able to export more. Now it's very expensive for a farmer to grow something. We can't compete with our neighbors. But we used to be the breadbasket of Southern Africa. All of a sudden, we are importing chibage from Zambia. How did that happen?
Apart from that, some farmers say the whole agriculture sector is highly politicized, a situation which is driving away investors. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about ZCTU's peaceful demonstrations in Zimbabwe.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The situation remains tense in Durban after the port city was hit by violence directed against foreigners living in South Africa.
ZANU-PF will hold primary elections in Bulawayo tomorrow to pick candidates who will represent the party in the June 10th by-elections that have divided the MDC led by Morgan Tsvangirai.
And the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has handed over petitions expressing its dismay over the deteriorating economic situation in the country amid reports that nationwide demonstrations were a flop.
Now, stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.